Hey friends, welcome to the Raising Boys and Girls podcast. I'm Sissy Goff.
And I'm David Thomas.
And I'm Melissa Trevathan.
And we're so glad you joined us for this conversation. Let's dive in. Beyond excited to introduce all of you to Dave and Julie Hunt, who are longtime friends of ours, folks we admire, folks we enjoy.
Yes.
Julie and I met in grad school. That's how far we go back.
I forgot that, y'all.
First day.
Wow. First day. How did y'all connect? What happened?
Do you want to tell?
You tell.
Okay. So we're in this office building. It was weird. And we were just getting to know each other. I mean, like, hi, what's your name?
Yeah.
And David and I had each just gotten married months. Well, me, it was 10 days before.
Wow.
Dumb idea. But I got married and then 10 days later started grad school.
And you me, got like married that 10 summer. Weeks before. Yeah.
And so we were talking about that. And so there was this connection already because we both were in the same season of life. And in that way, and starting graduate school. And then you said something, David, about your wife worked at this school and it was a Christian school. And I thought, oh, you're a believer? Because in the arena we were in, it was kind of rare and controversial, maybe ostracized in moments. So it was this really cool automatic connection that we had, stage of life and faith in common. And so it was like, it was great from then on.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
My wife would say, if she were sitting here, Julie Hunt is the best thing that came out of you going to graduate school.
She has said that.
She said it 100 times. She's like, I'm glad you got a diploma, but Julie Hunt was the win of that experience. And that happened in both directions. Because when I met your husband, I'm like, oh my goodness. And you all, the rarity of that. And I think any married person listening knows that it just doesn't always run both directions.
Doesn't.
It's this rare gem that felt like God's kindness from that experience. And my favorite tradition from this friendship is we discovered early into the game, Dave and I have a birthday both in the month of July, a few days apart, and Julie and Connie launched a celebration decades ago. We maintained it for decades.
Yep.
Yeah.
We call Celebration of Days.
That's true.
Where we get together and have our wives are just insane cooks. Like it's next level.
We
it's
love to
it's
cook
something
together.
Extraordinary.
It's really fun.
And they prepare just this beautiful meal. And we have all these fun traditions around it, different things we've done over the years. And it is honestly one of my favorite days of the year every year.
No question.
So
one of the highlights
cool.
of my year every year.
I know.
Yeah. I remember the first year Connie and I made invitations. Please join us at the Celebration of Daves, you know, and sent them to the, or handed them to the Daves. And they were like, who's coming? We're like, just us. I'm like, oh. It's like, no, it's just a double date. But we're going to cook together. And it's been so much fun because our lives are so busy that sometimes it's the anchor of our connection with each other is that July dinner. So it's fun.
So wait, how many years have y'all done it?
Well, it was before Lily was born. So, and she's 22.
About to turn 24.
24. Yeah.
That's crazy.
So,
over 25 years.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That is incredible.
Just the gift of friendship for that long feels so rare. And as this conversation develops, you will understand more why. I couldn't be more thankful for the gift of these two people. So thrilled to get to spend this time with you all.
Well, I haven't gotten to spend so much time with you, but I definitely have admired you both for so long. And I love what you said about y'all, that all four of you have connected.
It's really rare.
Yes. I read a book. I don't know if y'all have read Mrs. Miniver.
No.
It's the sweetest little book. And one of the things, which a lot of people listening won't even understand this, but y'all will get this. One of the things it talked about, it's just this funny story about they're having people over for a dinner party and they're having a really hard time picking couples because that idea like, well, we really like her or we really like him. And they said that it's a little bit like, remember when we would get 33s, those records that you get for the single. And on the flip side is the song that no one would buy.
B-side.
Yeah, it compares so many marriages to a B-side.
That's funny.
That's good.
And y'all are all four A-sides. It's like, what a great friendship built on ASAP.
I love that.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, I'm gonna check out that book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that sometimes, to have a friendship where any of us could have a conversation with the other, you know, like you and Dave, you and Connie could connect and have a conversation and pick her mother up from the airport. You know, things like that. And then also David and I could talk shop or whatever. And so that's really cool.
It's been a gift.
Well, speaking of talking shop, will y'all talk a little bit about the work you both do and about your family?
I have been a worship leader for, I guess, 30 years now, which is just sort of crazy in a lot of different contexts, whether it's on staff at church or doing retreats or camps or events or whatever it is. I'm still doing that and I'm thankful that I get to do it and love that. And also have a woodworking business, community tables. I build mostly tables, but really anything that custom that somebody wants. Well, within reason.
So. Community tables, meaning long tables. So lots of people can gather around them specifically.
It was birthed out of just sort of a side hustle, actually just a desire to build a table for ourselves. And then I built some more for some friends, built one for the Thomases.
Our kitchen table.
And then it was just like this, everything I was building was a hub of community for these families. And so Julie came up with the name. She said, what do you have in common with these projects? And I said, well, they're all like community areas. And she said, what about community tables? I was like, yes, that's exactly it. And the idea of getting to build a table for a family that's going to be, this is going to be the center of their family's life together for a number of years. It's just a joy. It's absolutely awesome. And I've built a lot of tables and gotten a lot better. I'm so sad that the Thomases was the first table I built other than ours. And so I've actually offered to rebuild it and they won't let me rebuild it.
Someday it'll fall apart and they'll let you rebuild it.
I've learned a lot since then about tables and
buildings.
Okay. And let me just comment on the Dave just slipping in that word. Well, really anything he said with a lot of humility. I once said to him early in our friendship, like, if I didn't like you so much, I might hate you, because he is one of these guys who can do anything. Mm. He can write songs. He plays multiple instruments. He's released records. He could build anything. He's one of the best grillers that I know. Like, it's really overwhelming, but I do like you so much. But someone who is skilled really only in eating dessert and recommending television shows. It's right. So humbling to be around you.
Yeah.
So you're underselling yourself.
He's been called a Swiss Army knife. And yes. I think that's a good metaphor for Dave. He's very multifaceted.
I mean, I think that works with my sevenness and Enneagram 7, just because I can sort of do anything. And the problem is I have a hard time settling on one thing. And so then it's just like this to this to this to this to this. And sometimes I still think, what am I going to be when I grow up and I'm 50?
Oh, yeah. And he was a college athlete. Like, I could go on and on. It's ridiculous. All sides of your brain work, and it does not make sense to me. Julie.
So, I, in contrast to that, I am a professor of social work at Belmont University in Nashville and have been there 24 years. So it's kind of opposing in that kind of, you know, tenure there. So I teach undergraduate social work education, and I currently
that has changed so much over the years.
It has
too.
Changed
That's
so
fascinating
much. Students
like,
have changed. Yes. Our campus has changed. Education has changed. So I do that, and I love it very much. And you asked about our family. We have three children. We have a son, Asher, who is about to graduate from college next month.
Wow.
He is at Belmont, and we have a sophomore in college, Lainey, who is at Mercer University in Georgia. She's, And then we have a sophomore in high school at Hillsboro here in Nashville. Lucy. Those are our people.
Those are our people.
Mm-hmm. Who are remarkable human beings that I love knowing too. I want to also say, side note to you, Julie, that I had the opportunity for several years to come in and guest lecture in some of your classes. And my favorite part of that experience was to watch students interact with you.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine so.
I would say every time I was there, like, you have no idea how good you all have it. Like, and it was always echoed with a, like just this sense of agreement that they understood the gift of getting to sit under your teaching and the experience of just being in relationship with you that I didn't have going to a big, huge university and sitting in large auditoriums with a professor who really only knew my social security number, not my name. And the way you know students and relate to them, it's beautiful to watch.
Thank you. So, I do think they know how deeply I care about them. So,
I know what that'd be true.
I can't have imagined a professor in college.
Thank you. That's incredible.
Beautiful to watch. Okay. Well, speaking of your kids, you have raised two teenagers, currently raising a third. What would you all say is your favorite thing about adolescence, and what have you learned along the journey?
I love the energy that adolescents have. I think they are just, it's overwhelming sometimes, but it's also incredible to watch. It's a little awkward sometimes. And so they have this energy, but sometimes don't know exactly how to express it or how, and that's interesting to watch, but just to see how much energy they have for life. And as I'm getting older, just desiring to feed off that energy is something that I'm finding myself doing. Also, just the ability to think abstractly. Like, I did youth ministry for a season and college ministry for a season, and seeing these students sort of come to life spiritually and thinking in a different realm than when they were younger, and thinking about spiritual things and emotional health, and is just fascinating to watch, and a really true joy to be a part of. And then their ability to learn, just that, like our daughter, middle daughter, was in a number of productions throughout middle school and high school, and she was Mary Poppins and had to learn so many lines.
So many lines.
We were just sort of, and like, how in the world? And she just nailed it. It was awesome. And I thought, how can you do that? And then she did it again in high school. She was
Alice in Wonderland. Yeah. That crazy weird poem, the Jabberwocky. Yes. It's not even words. I mean, it's gibberish. She did that.
Yeah. Maybe I could do that in the past. I don't remember, but it's just fun to watch it now.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples.
Yes, for the samples, because seasonal allergies are no joke in the state of Tennessee.
Or Kentucky, where I spend the summers at Hopetown. I spend most of the summer outdoors and could not function without allergy relief.
Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
You just described my exact state in waking up, minus the need for coffee.
I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for years, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can be outside with the kids at camp without my eyes watering like a fountain, and I can speak without feeling like a frog has jumped into my throat.
But at Hopetown, a frog could jump into your boat or your bed, and Claritin can't really help with that.
That's true, but they've got allergies covered. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear.
Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription.
Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear.
Use as directed.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things about adolescence, and I was grappling with the word to use, but I think that how keen they are to fake and authentic. They just smell baloney.
Yes.
And I love that. I love that they know what's real and they know when you genuinely care and when you're faking it or feigning it. And they want real. They want to be taken seriously as a real human. And I really value that kind of discernment that they can have. Not all do, but a lot do. Yeah. So I really love that.
Seems like more than ever, too.
Yeah. Can you say more about that? I want to hear that. Well, from your perspective.
It feels more like they're prioritizing that, I think, than I don't think I would have even thought about that when I was a teenager. I mean, I think if someone had encountered someone that felt really inauthentic, I might have picked up on it. Mm-hmm. But I just think we talked a lot about how it feels like teenagers long to have more purpose and make a difference in the world more than we've ever seen. And it feels tied into the same idea of like who we are in the world, the difference we want to make feels different in a neat way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And thinking about just, you know, what we've learned along the journey, watching our three children grow up, I'm just blown away at how different they are. Mm-hmm. And they're from the same gene pool. That just doesn't make sense to me that they're so different. I mean, they definitely have their similarities, but the way that one of them handled certain seasons versus the way another handled it was just that they do it so differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that hopefully that can be an encouragement to other parents, is that it's okay if your kids are different. It's a little bit frustrating because you think, well, this worked for this kid, so now I'm going to try that for this kid. And it doesn't always work, which is hard.
And it's hard when you're trying to be fair and equitable in parenting, and they're just not the same. Kids just aren't. Our experience, our three children are very different from each other, how they're wired, what's meaningful to them, what's persuasive, effective in parenting. And so it's challenging when you think, how can I be equitable and yet distinctly different with each child and in their ages? And then when you have one that is keeping tabs, they're like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem fair, you know? And so then you have to justify that and explain it. And I was thinking, what have we learned along the journey, or what have I learned along the journey, is my issue is trying to not take things personally. So teenagers are up and down. Adolescents have a wide range, like Lisa DeMora talks about, the wide range of their emotions, high highs and low lows and rapid shifting. And I tend to go with them to the high high and go with them to the low low and try really hard to be an effective parent. And it's hard in some moments to not take personally when it's not working, or when I can't make them not be low low. I can't change that. And I have to really get perspective and stay grounded myself so that I'm not yanked to their highs and lows. And because I believe in parenting, one of our biggest roles is to be an anchor for them. And so to be an anchor means I've got to be really grounded myself so that the chain in that, you know, attached to the anchor can flip around in the raging sea, but that I'm okay. And so that means I've got to be connected to something stronger than me so that I can stay anchored for them. So I think that's been one of the biggest learning pieces for me in this journey, is how to not be affected by their swirling emotions. And
it's such a great reminder too, because I mean, I think even you saying before, is it okay if I say that you're a two?
Yeah.
I mean, one of your superpowers then is empathy. Mm-hmm. And really in every other relationship, as you're sitting with someone who's struggling, your foot forward is empathy. And you're not thinking, I can't get caught up in the swirl. But it's like the one relationship, or the one type of relationship you have in your life, that it's that really hard balance the most, that they need you to hear them and sit with them, and they need you to be grounded in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And so, I would think that's especially hard, as empathetic as you are naturally, to figure out the balance. And how do you have empathy, but still, like, it's like one foot in each world straddling, you know? Yeah. So if we were going to shift to stage five, which you really have committed your life to working with these kids, and you talking about how much students have changed. Mm-hmm. And I would love to hear what you love about this stage in particular.
I love that in this age, the college, the kind of typical college student age, especially for students who get the opportunity to be in college. Like, we have some family members who haven't gone to college, and it's been different for them. These ages aren't necessarily synonymous with college years.
Right.
And we've seen that kind of bear out. But with working with college students, they're so eager to learn. They are being exposed to things that they've never been exposed to, people who have different perspectives than they've ever experienced from different parts of the world, different parts of the country, classes they've never taken. They're in a philosophy class. They're in a biology class. They're in a diversity class. And it's just like, what? You know, every day is this new information being brought to them that they're getting to grapple with and process and decide what is resonant with them. And so then watching them become who they're going to be in a lot of ways. I mean, when you graduate from college, you're really in a lot of ways set on a trajectory of who you're going to be in the world, how you relate to people, how you communicate with people, what you value, your worldview. It's just really substantially shaped in that time. In college. And so to get to bear witness to that is incredible. And then to get to be a contributor to, like, what about this? Have you thought about this? Or I hear you saying that, and I wonder if you saw it this way, or if you heard somebody share their perspective and it was different than that, how do you make meaning of that? So just getting to contribute to that, and then to get to debrief it. I say to my students all the time, you know, the learning comes in the debrief when we do an activity or a role play, and then we debrief it. I'm like, that's where the real learning comes, is when we talk about what we just did. So I think getting to read their journals or their papers or have conversations with them after the speaker or the film or the whatever, and then getting to help them process that is like amazing to see that transformation. And yeah, so I just think it's a really very formidable time that sets a trajectory for humans. It's really cool. Yeah.
If I were listening to this podcast, I would be looking up, how do I get my child to Belmont?
And it's exactly
how can
what
Julie
I
Hunt
thinking.
Be my child's teacher? I mean, totally, that's what I would be thinking if I were listening.
I had the exact thought. I'm like, enrollment is increasing as we sit in this room right now.
Seriously.
This is not a paid advertisement.
I know. I get it. That's fascinating. We were having the same thought.
That is so funny.
Okay, Dave, you have also worked for years with students in this space, and you're both, as you all shared, currently parenting two college-age students. What would you say are some of the unique challenges you see young adults face, and what are best practices or best ways you think parents can support kids in this space?
They don't know how to talk on the phone.
That is,
I was thinking about that. I thought that was initially a sort of a joke thought, like, just if they'd learn how to have a phone conversation. But then I started thinking about that. I've had this conversation with both of my college age kids. Like, they're like, oh, dad, I got this text from the dentist, and my appointment is when I'm not going to be in town because I'm going to be at college. I'm like, well, you need to call the dentist and change your appointment. And she's like, I don't know how to do that. I'm like, wow. What? And she, because I guess I just take it for granted that I'm older and have learned these things, but also that this is a different generation that texts and doesn't talk on the phone much. So then we're talking about it, and I said, well, okay, she said, what do I do? I said, well, just call the dentist, tell them the situation, and say, I need to see if I can change my appointment because I'm going to be in town at this point. She said, can you say that again? I'm like, yeah. Just tell them I'm going to be in town at this time. She's like, what did you say a second ago? I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm writing this down.
Which is so brilliant. Yes.
She's like writing the script. And but I mean, it would be so easy for me to say, I'll just call them and take care of that for you. But I'm also like, you can do this. And
you need me to help you do this so that you can do this in the rest of your life.
And they've gotten better at it as we've helped them along the way. I mean, our son he had to get a couple tires. And so we got tires. We went to the store, we got them. And then not long after, he had the other two needed to be replaced. And I said, hey, you did this with me. Now your job is to go get the tires. I'll pay for them. You go do it. Make it happen. He's like, okay, okay. And then later I saw him. I said, you get your tires replaced? He goes, yeah. He didn't even tell me that he did it. He just did it. Right. But it was, you know, just those things of helping them along the way, walking alongside of them, but not doing it for them. Mm. Just helping them figure out what it means to become an adult. I mean, I've heard the term adulting from so many students and young adults, which seems funny to me as a verb that you would adult, but I think that for them it is a big transition, and it is doing something. It's not being something, and they're becoming that, but they're having to do it first before they become it. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so it's I think that's something that we as parents can help them do and not do it for them. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, they need support in learning how to do it, and they need us to not do it. Mm-hmm. Both.
Well, and then communicating too. I meant to say this earlier, I think, at some point when I was talking about what we learned along the way, is just constantly communicating with our kids. Because then when they do have those situations, they're not just thinking, well, I don't even know what to call. I can't call my parents because we don't talk. But just like all through childhood and then adolescence, having conversations with them about things, not forcing it because they won't listen to you too long. But if they open the door, we are jumping through that door to talk to them about stuff and constantly keeping that communication going every second that we see the moment. And I mean, it's so easy to be distracted when our kids are with us and we miss those moments. So just being on guard and on the ready for those communication moments, so that then when they need help and these kinds of things, you think, okay, well, we are already having this conversation of just ongoing conversation of learning. And so this is how you can do that, that sort of thing. Because I don't know that I got that as a kid as much. My parents did help me learn to do things, but we didn't talk a lot about feelings or about specifics of things. They were just like, yeah, you can do this. And it's so supportive being at every sporting event, but not communicating about minutia of little things. I think I wish I had had that. So I'm trying to figure out how to do that now as a parent.
Mm-hmm. You're doing it.
I was about to say, right. Sounds you're like doing you're it. Doing it. You're
yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, this season of our podcast is about ages and stages with kids. So if you each had to say a favorite stage and why, what would y'all say?
I think my favorite stage, well, I have two answers. I think my favorite stage that I thought of was the elementary years, the elementary school years, because they're eager, they're curious. You can have conversations. You can have, well, the other day I was cleaning out we have a library room in our house, and I was cleaning out some things, and I saw these coin collection books that we bought, and we were looking quarter collection, and we're like looking for all the different state quarters, and I thought, oh, I loved when that would have been fun for my kids. Yes. Like, I'm thinking about if this year at Christmas break, I was like, hey, guys, we're going to collect quarters. Look in your pockets. They'd be like, what are you talking about? You're so weird, you know. But I thought, oh, when we did that when they were in elementary school, it was just such you could have adventure. Mm-hmm. You could tuck them in bed, and they wanted you to talk to them and tuck them in bed. And it wasn't like, we're going to bed, turn out the light, you know. I love that season. You can answer, and then I'll tell my part two of my answer.
Yeah, because I said this, I was thinking the same thing. Elementary was just such a sweet time. I love all the stages of parenting. I loved having a baby and being able to find a way, figure out how to soothe the baby. And I loved watching them walk and grow and play. But then when they were able to like interact, and it was just such a sweet time, like bedtime rituals were so sweet. And eventually they grew out of that, which was hard. And then now it's like, hey, I'm going to bed, Lucy. just put your phone on the charger in our room and turn the lights out, please. And then I'm gone. And I thought, this is so weird that I'm going to bed before my kids.
And then I'm staying up because that's when she'll actually talk. That's true. Yeah.
Those bedtime conversations are still happening late at night. But just that they love to play and they thought I was funny and I'm not funny. And that's okay. I've come to realize I'm not funny. And the only time I'm really funny is when I'm not meaning to be. And so, but they used to think I was funny. And it stroked my ego a little bit. But no, that was a sweet time to be a parent with them, watching them just be eager for life.
And something that I was thinking about was that was also pre-phones, smartphones. And so there was more attention to the present with each other, with nature, with quarter collecting, you know, without phones, and they were the ages they are, there were no iPads, you know, that was really, it was a much more attuned time, I think, because of the era also. So I appreciate that. And my other answer was that I love to learn. Like, it's one of my core values is learning. I just love to learn new things. And so I've loved every stage of parenting because of that, because it has been an amazingly rich education to parent all the different stages. And I have told new parents before, like a mom will say to me, okay, we finally found a rhythm. And I'm like, oh, well, watch out. It's about to change because it just doesn't last very long. Then they change you know, like as soon as you get the sleep schedule, then it's like, well, then they're going to start dropping a nap, or then they're going to crawl. Then they're going to, you know, every stage. So it does feel like a journey of education. And I have loved that all throughout their lives. And now trying to figure out how to do this stage of parenting.
Sissy, we have had an amazing month of travel. Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Texas.
How many tacos do you think we've consumed?
There is no telling. How many gallons of queso?
And how many chips?
As consistent as we are in eating tacos, we have to also be consistent with taking our vitamins.
Yes, we do. And with this much travel, I can't find time to get to the store and buy the things I need in life, like vitamins.
Guess what? With Hiya, you don't have to.
Well, David, I love Hiya and have them at my house for Henry.
As I've told you before, and I'll remind you again, they can work for big kids as well. I take them all the time. Typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise, filled with 2 teaspoons of sugar, unhealthy chemicals, and other gummy junk growing kids should never eat.
That's why Hiya was created, the pediatrician-approved, super-powered, chewable vitamin.
Hiya fills in the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment our kids need with a yummy taste they love.
Formulated with the help of nutritional experts, Hiya is pressed with a blend of 12 organic fruits and veggies, then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals, including vitamin D, B12, C, zinc, folate, and many others to help support immunity, energy, brain function, mood, concentration, teeth, bones, and more.
I need all that.
Hiya is designed for kids of all ages, as David has proven, and sent straight to your door, so there is one less thing to worry about.
I love that they ship straight to your door. Parents and people who travel like we do have one less thing to worry about.
We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to HiyaHealth.com/RBG. This deal is not available on their regular website.
Go to HiyaHealth.com/RBG and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults. What was the most challenging stage?
I think it depends on the kid.
Totally.
Because they, like I said earlier, some of them just sailed through certain seasons and others were just paralyzed by it. And I think the most challenging thing is when you feel helpless as a parent and you don't know what to do to help them. And so you do the things you do or that you know to do. You read books or you talk to other parents or you call your friend David Thomas, who is an expert, and say, what do we do? Mm-hmm. And he says, it's okay. You know, just, and sometimes you don't get any answers mm-hmm. and you just have to walk alongside of them and love them. And that is so hard. Mm-hmm. That's so hard. And you have to, at some point, most times in those moments, just trust that God is with us and he's watching us. He knows, and that he loves us. He loves your kids. And it's just, it's really challenging. And I know that's not, that doesn't necessarily seem very hopeful, but that's just the reality. And usually those storms pass and you get through those. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they last longer than others. And that's part of parenting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of my biggest themes that I would say in parenting is knowing your child and knowing them in that season because they change. So I agree 100% that the most challenging stage have been really different for our different children. And so then it's about creativity, problem solving, a lot of prayer, and just facing your weakness. Mm. I think that the vulnerability of facing your limitations has been challenging. Like, I could do a chart on the refrigerator and we had stickers because it felt like, oh, I know how to manage it. I can do this. There's a strategy. I'm going to implement it. But it's just like, I just think parenting is really vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A beautiful way to say it.
Yeah, it is.
A truthful way to say it.
Mm-hmm. Because you just love them so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to do it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember talking to a good friend early on in Asher's life, and I was like, I'm just so scared I'm going to screw up. He goes, oh, you're going to screw up. He's just, what really matters is what you do when you screw up.
Yeah.
Ooh. I was like, oh, that's helpful, but that's horrible. What do I do? He goes, I don't, just admit your faults. Mm-hmm. Be vulnerable in front of your kids. Let them see you. Let them hear you ask for forgiveness when you fail.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, that was such good advice a long time ago.
Well, you've already said part of the answer to our next question, which I love, which would be, what's some of your favorite parenting advice you've ever been given?
Yeah, that's great parenting advice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going to screw them up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, but it's the repair that matters more.
Yes, it really does. Mm-hmm. I think that a piece of parenting advice that was given to me, and I don't know where it came. I mean, it probably has come from a lot of places, but to focus more on raising adults than raising children. And so to kind of keep the long view in mind. And I think that's very helpful and wise. And it keeps you away from the maybe trying to keep up with the Joneses or trying to be a perfect, my kid's got to be perfect or we've got to be perfect in this. But it's more of like, what are we building here? Like, what's the trajectory here of this child's life? And how are we contributing to a really hopeful trajectory for them? And even like the examples you gave of teaching our kids how to make a phone call to the dentist office or whatever, where it's like, okay, I'm keeping the long view in mind of forming an adult here. And like when they were in middle school and they would be having this tricky thing with a teacher or needing to advocate about something that happened or ask a question, we would say like, it would be easier for me to write this email. It'll take like 17 times the amount of effort to have them write it. But I think with thinking about trying to raise adults, they need to write that email. Now, I'm going to coach them. I'm going to, like, you write the first draft. Show it to me. Okay, let's talk about your tone. Let's talk about the words you use. What are you asking of them? Have you respected them? You know, let's go back and draft two, you know, and trying to help them to think about how can I communicate this in a way that is respectful and effective. It's like, oh, well, now they're really good at writing emails to their professors or to their teachers now. They're really good at a lot of those things because of us thinking about who will they be when they're 22. That's how we need to deal with when they're in seventh grade or whatever. So, yeah, I think that that's really helped me in parenting.
Mm-hmm. And helped them in adulting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about, there was a training that Julie went to with a friend of ours was doing, and it's Circle of Security. I don't know much about that.
It's like an attachment-based method of, counseling, teaching. This friend, Melissa, is a Montessori teacher. And so she was doing this as part of a training for Montessori teachers. So it's attachment.
So I didn't go to the training, but I would hear all about the training.
Because it was 8 weeks, you know.
Julie came home, and 1 week she came home and she had this sort of mantra that they talked about. And it was just 4 words: bigger, stronger, wiser, kind. And just talking about, these are the things we are and we are to be as parents. And it was very easy for me to remember. And in moments of tenseness, for me to think, I'm bigger than them, I'm wiser than them, I'm stronger than them, but I need to be kind as well. And I was thinking about the balance of that. And Julie and I were talking about this week, and she was saying, What about woodworking? Like, is there a metaphor for that? I'm like, oh, there's totally a metaphor for that. Think about building a table. It's like, there's elements to the table. There's the design of the table. There's the actual building of the table. There's the prep for finishing the table, like sanding. And then there's staining and finishing the table. And if the design's not right, then it's not going to be well built. And then if it's not well built, it's not going to last. If it's not sanded consistently, you actually may not know that until you put stain on, which is such a bummer, because then you have to go back and completely sand again. But just having those imbalances is so important for the finished product. And so, not that our kids are products, but that we are to balance those things, to be wiser, to be stronger and bigger, but not to be kind. We're just mean. But if we're kind and not those other things, then we just let them, we just let them go and do whatever they want to do. So trying to find the balance of those has been, it's just easy for me to remember. And it's a good way to think about approaching parenting.
Yeah. Because there's moments when it's like, I'm being kind, but I'm not being strong. I need to be stronger. And then times that it's like, oh, I'm big and strong, but I am not kind or wise, really. So we got to recalibrate that to kind of make sure that we're having all of this. That's been really helpful. Like, we say it to each other.
Yeah.
In the past however many years, that was probably 8 years ago or something.
Dave, are you being stronger?
Bigger, stronger, wiser, kind?
No.
Which one? Which one do we need right now? To add into the mix.
We turn this into an 8-parter. But to be respectful of your time, it's so fun to ask a food related question of the two of you, because you are such great cooks and grillers.
We love
and,
to eat food.
You're so gifted at it. And so we end every time with
We're gifted at eating food.
You are gifted at preparing, and you love to eat like I do. We end with a 2-parter, food related: queso or guac, and what's your favorite taco?
Queso, no question.
Guac.
We end up getting both.
Or see all of the above.
Yeah.
Favorite taco?
I
love them all.
Yeah.
But we live in Nashville, and there's a couple of places that are my favorites.
Okay.
Like Baja Burrito has an amazing brisket taco. It's just amazing. Troy nailed it on the brisket. It's so good. Like, it's so... I might go over there after we get done.
We would support that.
And then I also love SATCO, which stands for San Antonio Taco Company.
No.
Julia's not like SATCO, but I love it so much. I love it. Their queso is amazing.
Yep.
And they make their tortillas.
We had it for lunch
we
today.
We just ate it.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yes. We did. So good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just get their chicken tacos. They're just so, so good.
Yeah.
3-1 right there.
But we really love you, Julie. We think you're so wise.
Thank you. You know, I just love every food, really. So tacos, I like tacos with lots of stuff on them. Mm. So I'll take some kind of like a fish taco with lots of toppings on it. Or if I just get a chicken taco, I want it to have, they can't roll it. I mean, they can't figure out how to put it in the foil because it's just, you know, pouring out. So rice, beans, chicken, peppers, onions, guac, jalapenos, cilantro, sour cream, cheese, put it all on there. And then it's like, I need a fork. So yeah, just lots of stuff on there.
Yeah.
That's what I like for a taco.
Y'all, thank you.
Sure.
What a rich conversation.
Thanks.
So much wisdom.
Thank you for having us.
I was thinking back to talking about our meeting at grad school, and Sissy's heard me tell this before, that part of how part of how I got through grad school, like, I think I'm a great learner. Like, you and I share that. And I'm a decent student. I'm a pretty good writer, not a great test taker. And
part of
how I maneuvered my way through grad school was every time it was time to sign up for a group project, I would immediately shoot my hand up in there and be like, I'll work with Julie Hunt. Like, I just immediately, before we were even assigned. And just being in close proximity was extremely helpful, not just relationally, but academically as well. But I was thinking about, Dave, what I said earlier to you about your talents. And I would say, if I were to name one, like, maybe my best talent, I would say I think it is surrounding myself with really great people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to all three of you in different moments of this conversation and thinking, oh my gosh, like, I think one of the things I feel most proud of in parenting is exposing my kids to just amazing human beings. And that the three of you set the bar so high in friendship, I think, for my kids to have been in close proximity to you all, and just to get to be in this room and in this conversation, I'm so grateful. So
I think really that's really key for all three in parenting, is to have trusted adults that your kids have near them. Especially in adolescence and young adulthood, they just need, they need the echo. They need the stereo of not just the parent's voice, but another voice.
Yeah, we prayed for that before our kids were born.
Yeah.
Who are going to be the adults in their life that are going to speak truth in their life that they won't hear from us? Because we both had those people in our own lives. And they were incredibly significant in shaping us who we are today. And we've seen different people pour into our kids' lives, and we just can't even be thankful enough for that. Such a gift.
David, what a team we have that we get to call friends who help make this podcast possible.
Amanda Young, our operations manager.
Chris Starrett, our engineer and producer.
Our management team at KCH.
And we are thrilled to be a part of the That Sounds Fun Network.
Our music was created by the insanely talented Dave Haywood of Lady A.
And if this podcast felt helpful to you, please consider subscribing, liking, sharing, all the things.
We are grateful for you and cheering you on always.